just for you, sir, on your computer. It's not about the future, but it's all the way from Utah. No matter where you're from, you can download This Week in Mormons. Join Jeff and Al and round up your pals to bring a jello salad.
Hi, folks. Thanks for tuning into This Week in Mormons. How nice are you spending some time with us, your precious time?
How nice are you?
I mean, what is this costing you for your bill rate? I don't even know. Glad you're spending it with us as we will discuss many things.
Wonderful things. Nice things.
Which shall
remain. Good things, bad things.
A mystery. We are building a mystery.
We apparently pick fights. We do. We are politically correct or not politically correct based on how you understand politically correct. We are Facebook warriors. I mean, all of the things that you've come to know and love us for, that is what we do.
That's right. So if you're going to do this, plant that seed, everybody. Plant that seed and send us $5 and plant the seed.
All right, way to plant. Way to plant.
You plant this seed and you will be saved. And you plant that seed.
You plant.
You plant that seed, then we will send back the seed.
That's a little bit of John Oliver and also a little bit of Arrested Development. I feel like we've run the gamut.
Yeah, way to plant, Al.
Our show here is done. A minute 46 in. We are out of here.
How bold would it be if we literally published a show that was a minute and 47 seconds long?
How bold? See, that is art. That is daring.
No one is doing a one-minute podcast. There's so much said in what we don't say, right?
We're using negative space to express ourselves.
We will create a show where we will have large swaths where we will talk for a minute 47, silence for 37 minutes, and then we will speak.
What if we I'm going to register 1 minute podcast and we're going to have
that'd be so funny.
Hi, welcome to the show. All right, we'll see you next week.
On my life, I would jump on that with you and we would just crank out literal 1 minute shows.
They all would have to have a guest, though. And so we'd get on, and we'd banter, and then we'd go right to the guest, and then we close.
It'd be so funny.
That's the one-minute podcast.
I think this is perfect.
It's a great idea.
Take that, Writer's Almanac.
It's a really good idea.
Ha! Garrison Keillor's got 4 minutes at 6:45 in the morning. One. We're going to do one.
The one-minute podcast.
I gauge my life.
Tony Robbins is waiting for us.
Yeah. My commute is built around whenever the Writer's Almanac comes on, like where I'm at on my journey. So I know if I'm ahead or behind.
Okay.
It's the perfect thing.
But you would never get that with a one minute radio show. You're never going to get
that. Nope, that'd be by the time I turn on the car.
Programming becomes so hard when you need so many 1 minute shows to fill an hour, 60 of them to fill 1 hour.
Our download numbers could be insane. I mean, we could publish 5 shows a week.
We're doing 5 shows a week, absolutely.
A daily show, like a news broadcast. Like the disgrace. Brian Williams doesn't have a job. Maybe he could help us out.
All right, I would do it, Jeff. I would do it, but we got to quit Twim.
Oh.
No one has time for 2 podcasts. It's obscene.
You mean time to listen or time to produce?
Either.
Because yeah.
If
we do the 1 minute podcast, I'm going to limit the entire show notes to what could be put inside a Twitter or a tweet, rather.
140 characters.
I feel that is good for that kind of form. Or a Snapchat, even. The show will actually only be on Snapchat.
15 second snippets. Hey, welcome to the podcast. Anyway, we're going to. Well, that was a good one last time. Anyway, this time we're...
Everyone, you're gaining great insight into our strategy sessions for the show, which we do have every couple of years. Apparently, we're having one right now.
There's some good DNK, DNK on Instagram. They had a good podcast for a little while there.
I don't know what you just said. Who? Donkey Kong?
So, Diana Krall, somebody. He's some comedian on Saturday Night Live, but he did a... he was doing a podcast that never actually launched, and it was about 100 Instagram posts of, we're getting ready, stay tuned, big things coming. It's pretty funny.
And he never did it. What a hoser.
And he never did it.
Did you see the Ghostbusters trailer? Speaking of disappointing things.
No. Why is it disappointing?
Just didn't like it. That's all. It was weak.
If it's not Star Wars, I'm not going to watch the trailer.
That's fair. It's completely fair. And folks, we might actually have some Star Wars news later in the show this week. Kid you not. Two sci-fis and
That's not news.
And a boy wizard. This is going to happen. It's all interconnected. It's all related.
Wait. So, Jeff, you'll know this. Harry Potter, she's doing another Harry Potter series?
Is she? No. Well, she's not doing this series. What she's done is, okay, so we've got the movie coming out this year that's based on Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. That was a book referenced in the books as a book about, like, it's basically the book they would buy when they took the Hagrid's, you know, beastkeeping class stuff, right? That
so
was a
textbook. She's doing a movie about these magical beasts?
So they're doing a movie that goes to the background of the one who allegedly wrote the book about the magical beasts. And of course, it'll be a trilogy of some kind, presumably. So it takes place in the wizarding universe, but it takes place in the universe.
Yeah, if you can make The Hobbit 3 movies, you can make anything 3 movies.
And you can make the third installment rated R in the director's cut. That is...
Was it really?
Yeah, the director's cut of the last one is rated R. For violence.
Oh.
Very violent. Also, dwarvish lovemaking. But that's that's another thing entirely. So, anyway, yeah, the Harry Potter. So there's those movies coming out, and there's also a Harry Potter play coming out, of which there will be a novelization. So it's not quite the same as an actual Harry Potter book. It's like when you go see Star Wars, and then you can go buy the book. If you go to a bookstore, those existed once, then it says now a major motion picture or something along those lines. You know, it's the novelization of the movie. So it's not like you're seeing a real book. You're seeing a writer who saw a movie and said, I should write the movie out because it'll take people longer to read the movie than to watch it.
I thought that was the screenplay.
The difference with novelizations is they take some liberties. They actually change some plot points, subtle ones here and there. It's for the reader and all of us. Why watch
now,
the
movie? Now, did J.K. Rowling, did she write this movie adaptation?
You mean the novelization of the play?
Yes.
I believe she's only co-written it. I don't think this is a pure Rowling product.
She leased her name.
All I'm saying, she's...
She said, listen, yeah. I'm in for more millions. Just put my name on
it's
there.
It's like how Steven Spielberg directs the first two Jurassic Park movies, but then only produces the third one. You know, it's that kind of thing, people. This is Jurassic Park
3. Did he have his name on all three of those?
Yeah, and I believe he also produced Jurassic World, and you know my opinion of that film. So,
the greatest movie of all time.
Sure, that's what
I love
saying.
Jurassic Park and Jurassic World, both phenomenal shows. Phenomenal. Maybe the best of our generations.
Absolutely.
But... Jurassic Park 2 and 3, anything without a Jeff Goldblum, I'm not okay with.
Jeff Goldblum is in Jurassic Park 2. He actually has a bigger role in The Lost World than he does in the first movie. He's the lead in the second
movie. Oh, my.
So, clearly you're showing your ignorance. Well, you do not know this product.
By that logic, Jurassic Park 2 should have been much more memorable.
You have no knowledge of this franchise.
All I know is Jurassic World, greatest movie
How
of
dare
all time,
you?
And I will take
I am
that
now tasking
death.
You with watching those and then watching all 8 Harry
you
Potter
did
films.
You did not believe that it was a bad movie until you got online and were swayed by your critic
I was not
friends.
Swayed. I had my reservations.
You loved it? You thought it was
As
a great
everyone
film?
Everyone does on the internet. I went to the internet to find people to validate my feelings. That's what I went to do. I did not go there to have my mind changed. I wanted to find
you did?
Like-minded
you did.
Stuff.
All right.
So I could be angrier.
Well, I am full on a dinner of Kentucky Fried Chicken. I normally get the 2-piece meal. I got the 3-piece tonight, and that might have been a mistake.
Was it?
So
I have not been to KFC in years. So many years.
You know, I hadn't either until I remembered that they had, what's that stuff? Gravy. And it is delicious.
I used to like to get the...
They do it.
They didn't sell them at every KFC. I think it was a deal of whether it was franchised or...
Chicken Littles?
The Chicken Littles. I loved the Chicken Littles.
Oh, my. There was a time those were 25 cents a piece, maybe the greatest deal.
And only when they were done right, because different places did them differently. If you got them with the peppery mayo, that was the top notch right there.
Oh, the pepper mayo and the one pickle. So classy.
That's what you had to do. You go someplace, they'll just give you the piece of chicken, quote-unquote, on the bread. And that was it.
Oh, the Chicken Littles now are a disaster.
They're terrible. They've really ruined one of America's greatest and most
The Colonel would not stand for this.
Yeah. And for a franchise whose flagship location is in Utah, people. In the Mormon Mecca. They could do better.
You should know how to make a 25-cent meal.
Yes. That when people go to they go to Utah and they all visit Temple Square. What people don't know is they can visit the first KFC. Folks.
Where is that?
It's in Salt Lake. It's in Salt. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it is.
Because I've been to the one in Sugar House, and they don't treat.
No,
it
no,
like
no.
It's
I think it's in Salt Lake City, and it's just sort of west of the 15. And kind
is it still a store, or is it a like a museum?
Oh, it's a combination. I really don't know. Have you ever seen the McDonald's flagship in Chicago?
No.
That one's a bit different, of course, because McDonald's actually started in the L.A. area in California, but their headquarters are now in Illinois.
Right, Roy McDonald.
Yeah, so they started out there in California, but they're headquartered there. And in Chicago, they have a huge McDonald's and with an upper level that is a museum, a big old museum with the history of McDonald's. You can go to the McDonald's Museum in Chicago, and you can eat McDonald's food while you're there.
That just seems right.
It's almost at the same level as when they put a McDonald's in the Home Depot by my house growing up. That confused many of us.
No.
It was pioneering for the time when there was a McDonald's. And,
well, the McDonald's in a Walmart is genius. The McDonald's in a Home Depot, I question that.
Yeah, it's just a little weird. I'm not believing. Too much, you know, sawdust. I don't know. We're on some very exciting tangents this week. There's
So, Jeff, how are you?
My life is swell, Al. Can't complain. Great things are happening all around. You know?
Well, great.
Yeah, it is great. There's nothing wild or amazing to report, but it's just, you know, stuff's good. It's very warm here, though. It's 30 degrees warmer than what it's supposed to be. So that's different. It's weird when it's 80 degrees.
There will never be a time where you are not complaining about the weather in Tampa.
Ah, I did not complain.
It's too cold.
I observed.
It's too warm. I wish it was winter. I wish it was summer. Ah!
I rarely wish it's summer. I'm not going to lie to you.
You ready?
I mostly wish for it to be spring or fall. That's pretty much it.
Go to it, Jeff.
Anyway, stuff's great. Life's good. Good things happening everywhere. My kid is sort of crawling now, so that's kind of fun. And I've realized...
That is cool.
I've realized I basically have to remove anything that's within 3 feet from the floor.
What did I tell you? You stick with that fatherhood thing, it's going to pay off, and now look at you.
Yeah, so he's got poor technique right now, but he is officially able to crawl and get to stuff that he wants. So my precious books that I've picked up over the years, random coffee table books that are actually of value, going to have to put those somewhere else. They're not safe anywhere now.
Coffee table books are a thing of the past.
I have a book about Disneyland Paris that is worth $400.
Sell it.
I thought about selling it. I actually sold it once on Amazon, and then I reneged on the sale.
No, did you for real?
I didn't want to part with it in the end. I said, why? What am I going to do with this extra money at this point in my life?
Pay bills now.
I'm not going to buy something lasting, you know? I'm just going to go to Chick-fil-A and buy the whole store. Treat everyone there. I'll say, everyone, dinner's on me. Dinner's on.
So I don't know if I told you this. One time I went to Chick-fil-A.
Yes.
And they were having some sort of a contest who could sell the most calendars. And there was a guy and a girl at the registers.
I think you've told the story before. But tell it again.
Made me very happy.
But tell it again.
Made me very happy. So this guy is trying to sell me a calendar. I'm like, no, I don't need a calendar. And the girl is trying to sell her person a calendar. She sells one and gets very... Like,
these are the cashiers, the employees?
Okay. Yeah. She gets very, like, cocky. I think I'm remembering this right. She got very, like, loud and obnoxious about it. And so I bought, like, $100 worth or something ridiculous of calendars from my guy and was like, and he was like, all right, well, here you go. And I was like, I don't need them. Just give them out to everybody that goes into her line so she doesn't get any more. He's like, all right, sounds good. She like got so beside herself, ran back and got the manager. It was like, he can't do that. And I was like, oh, this money's real. This money floats. Get out of here, lady.
Was this at the Chick-fil-A and Sugar House?
Yeah, I was very excited to make this one man's night and give the shaft.
Al, that's the kind of guy you are, though. You like to, maybe not the shafting, but you like to make people's nights. You know, you like to look out for the little guy.
I do. I love a little obnoxious competition, and I love to slant the odds. I would be a great politician.
I want to embarrass you, though, and tell you that there is good there, folks. Al and I, a few years ago, we're up at Cedar Point in Ohio. We were hanging out at night. We went to some McDonald's to get some food, and Al felt bad for the receptionist who was swamped with so many people and things. And so he says, no, I want to go buy this girl a dinner at McDonald's and make her evening. And
we did, too. She was so excited.
And we did. And I stood there in that moment. I said, you know, I wouldn't think to bother with that. I'm usually thinking like, well, everyone's night sucks, probably. So, you know, buck up. It's going to be fine. Al says, no, what she needs is a double quarter pounder. And that's going to change everything.
Well, that was the time that we actually had a car in Cedar Point. The time I went after that, I was carless. Like they don't have a good taxi system there.
This wasn't like when you hitchhiked around Sandusky.
I went back to that same McDonald's. And I had to stand in the parking lot till some sweet old man comes out. I say, hey, buddy, me and my buddy got to get a ride to Cedar Point. What do you say, huh? He was like, yeah, I don't think so. But then I sweet-talked him. And some old man just gave us a ride from McDonald's.
Did he just drop you off the gate?
Kind of crazy.
I mean, he can't pay for parking. So what did he do? Just walk?
No, so it ended up he was taking his daughter and her boyfriend.
Oh.
Who were much older than us. This was an old group, and they were all going together. But then after this hitchhiking ride in, I kept seeing them randomly throughout the day, and I was like, oh hey, man, that gave us a ride. And he's like, it's me again. Let's chit-chat for a little bit.
Don't you love the awkward small talk when you're at places like amusement parks, when you see this, even if it wasn't that, but you could kind of just see that same random group of people all throughout the day, and it's like, oh
yeah,
here we are again.
I had that at Knott's Berry Farm when I went last month because there's nobody there, and so we kept like, I didn't see you on this ride. That's my Southern California accent.
That's exactly how we speak there. I'm very proud.
And I'd be like I had this like shouting across the park sort of relationship with a few of them. Did not know them.
Okay. Well, good. Other than these exciting stories, I hope you're doing well. I hope things are great. I see you're in Missouri.
Oh, of course. I'm well. I fly to Salt Lake tomorrow. I'm back in the old God's country. Good times.
So the women are quivering in their boots.
But today we have some breaking news.
tell me.
NPR had coverage.
This is from last
week. This Mormon Tabernacle Choir virtual choir.
Yes.
So the MoTab is doing this that virtual choir. We've talked about it before. You sing your part and record it on YouTube, and then somebody's going to mix all those videos. Some poor sap is going to mix all those videos. So they're going to do it. NPR thought that was neat. So there you go.
Well, that's great. Right now, NPR, my local station, is doing their semi-annual drive for money. So maybe I should give it to them so they can keep covering MoTab.
Jeff, if you don't donate, if everybody donated $5, they'd more than cover the cost of This American Life.
I feel like my charitable contributions are kind of tapped at this point, the whole 10% thing. So I don't know. Am I in bad form by being an NPR moocher? I don't know.
I believe you are.
I'm a leecher. I'm like the guy who's a leechered when downloading BitTorrents, right? I'm not a seeder. No, sir.
You're not seeding at all. You turn that off.
Leech for days. I look the gift horse in the mouth and I laugh.
And or whatever you leech it.
And whatever the expression is. Well, that's exciting. Yeah, so, I think you should do it.
You know, we have a lot of stories that really... That's about all they're worth.
This
could have been a 1 minute podcast. That was a perfect example.
Your daily of a 1 minute podcast. Did I tell
NPR
you?
NPR covered MoTab's virtual choir, a thing where you sing, upload it to YouTube, they mix it. Boom. See you next week, everybody. Have a great time.
If you want to talk about something fun, I saw there's a guy on Medium who's promoting himself. I mean, it's on Medium, but. Who's promoting himself with This Week in Mormonism, a weekly written rundown of events. Do I invoke my litigious nature?
Wait, that why is the that question. Funny? Why is that funny?
Because this is airing awfully close to our intellectual property, my dear boy.
How do we land there from Motab is on YouTube with NPR?
I don't even know. I was just thinking of you said these stories don't matter. I thought of stories that don't matter, and you know, one thing led to another.
Which takes me to my next point, Sally, you monster. How dare you cheat on me again? Anyway, let's go back to the news, everybody.
Who will Jeff sue today? That's the question.
Jeff, you're like Donald Trump. You threaten to sue, you don't sue.
Sometimes that works. You know how I paid for college?
Threatening to sue.
Wrong. Stafford loans. That's actually what I did.
Oh. Anyway,
so I love this one here from Mental Floss. Mental Floss for...
I wasn't sure if you were going back in, if you needed more.
Nope,
you kind of had your backpack on. The headlamp was still shining.
I'm going down to the mines today, son. I'll see you later. It's a company town. We live and die.
We're going to another story.
Have you ever been to an actual company town of like a mining town in West Virginia or elsewhere? You think the movies are faking it, but I drove through some once off of the interstates, and it's exactly like you think. You've got a big plant.
Was I with you? I feel like we did the same road trip.
No, this was a different trip. It was just, it's amazing. You see the guys walking around with their lunch pails, the bell rings, everything you see in the movies. Movies, as it turns out, tell the truth about everything. So, Mental Floss.
True.
Mental Floss is a relatively interesting publication. I like their YouTube channel, for example. Lots of interesting lists full of factoids and such. But here is
one. It's like BuzzFeed. It's the BuzzFeed. Was it before BuzzFeed?
I think Mental Floss is older than... I don't know if it's older than BuzzFeed. I feel like it's more of an intelligent BuzzFeed. It has worthwhile information. It's not salacious.
You're thinking of Vox.
Sure. Vox is... I like Vox, but they're getting a little bit weaker. They've lost a lot of their staff. No, you're thinking
more
of Vice.
More intelligent news or BuzzFeed.
Al loves Vice News. It's all he reads. Just Vice for days. So Mental Floss has a little... diagram an article here called the second largest religion in each state. And you look at this beautiful map of America, the land of the free and the future presidency of Ted Cruz, and we see the word Mormon everywhere. You also see a lot of Jewish, a little bit of Muslim, and the Jehovah's Witnesses have Louisiana just all tied up of all places. But Mormon is just all over the country from the peaks of the Cascades in the west all the way down to Charleston, South Carolina, and everywhere in between. So you would ask yourself, really, wait a minute, Mormonism is the second largest religion in all of these states, which I might add for some reason includes Utah on this map. Somehow Mormonism is the second largest religion in Utah. I don't even know how they got there for that.
We were interested in the portion of the population that follows a religious tradition other than Catholic or Protestant Christianity.
Which is fair, but you can't take it.
If you take that, Mormonism's number one, even with both of those combined in Utah.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense because it's just like, it's not the second. Even if you follow this and it is the second largest religion in the other states, in Utah, it doesn't make any sense.
So what would the second largest religion be?
Well, it depends.
Maybe they got FLDS mistaken and they were like, yeah.
Maybe they did. It seems that they're making this based on the assumption that Catholics and Protestants form the lion's share of religious adherents in most states, which they do. So it's almost like they're saying we're not, I don't know, Christians or something. But they decided to backhand it. They said, let's take the Catholics and the Protestants out of it and see who's left. But
Scott's
in Utah,
always trying to jack us.
In Utah, this should actually say, I'm guessing it should just say, I don't know. What do you think Utah has more of, Catholics or Protestants? I don't know. I feel like more Catholics. It's got a decent sized Hispanic population. You hear a lot about Catholicism in Utah.
Yes.
I'm going to say Catholicism.
A lot of Italians.
After Mormonism. Tons
of Italians.
A lot of
Italians.
And all those Tongans, too.
You got the Pie Pizzeria downtown Salt Lake. You got $5 pizza out of there. You're doing...
Is that one of those pizza places that follows the Chipotle model of just build your own and they crank it out? That's a model.
No, there's a lot... When Little Caesars hit, there was a lot of like $5 pizza places that came out.
That model, though, like Pyology and other places, very good. Very good. So,
and mental pizza?
Yeah, those kinds of things. So Mental Floss gets this one a little wrong. Who's still on the pizza?
Yeah, it's pizza.
I think you should open
a pasta or something.
There's different ones around the country. Al, you should open a franchise. I believe restaurant franchising is your should be your next move.
I hate the restaurant.
You
business.
Open a yogurt
Just
land.
Just being in a few restaurants, I don't
open
love
a yogurt land in DC, and I promise you riches beyond that which you can count.
That, so beyond measure. Riches beyond
treasure
measure.
Treasure beyond measure, my good friend. Totally beyond measure. I'm just
All
saying.
Right, so
the market's hungry.
Now, Jeff, I know what you're asking yourself every morning when you wake up. You wake up and you say two things. You say,
okay.
What's the most important thing?
Breakfast.
Family. Family.
Okay. Right, right. I thought you meant the thing.
Also, you're right. Also, you're asking yourself, why did Brigham Young create the Deseret alphabet? Well, I'll tell you.
I have wondered that. I mean, I know we've talked a little in the recent past just that the alphabet existed and what was the deal with it, but why?
Yeah, we've mentioned this before, and you had this burning question. So I sent Jake Healy to find out for us. Jake now with the story.
Why did Jake publish this somewhere else then if you sent him? Very curious. These are curious.
Hey, guys. It's me, Jake.
No, please read this in Jake's voice. Though it's the primary language of the United States, English is notoriously difficult to learn.
Yeah, so the idea is English was notoriously difficult to learn. So Brigham Young has an alphabet that's got like 40 characters. It's much bigger, and it's got all the sounds represented. So when you come over, it's 48 characters. It's easier for you to learn because there's no like what sound does the O make and what sound does the E make. It's just like, no, this is it. Boom.
It's all phonetic was the idea behind the Deseret alphabet is what you're saying.
Oh, it was all there.
But it was the same alphabet, but they just they still spoke. It was still English, right? But just using a different alphabet to speak English.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So he wanted to teach everybody how to read only a tiny language that they could speak everywhere. So it was kind of a genius move. And he commissioned a linguist around him. Somebody, not even a linguist, somebody that was good at language to come up with this. And
yeah, because like we said, it's just a new alphabet for an existing language, correct?
I feel like that would be a fun way to, it's going to be an easy code to crack, but we should come up with our
this
own,
is, this
sort of an elvish tongue.
Yeah, for Disneyland followers, this is like the old Indiana Jones ride when you could decode the language on the temple when you're in line. This was a thing. There's all these characters.
Wait, can you really?
Yeah, there's all these characters throughout the line, and they used to give you a decoder card that just showed, you know, each letter swaps in for a different letter, and then you could figure out things it says all throughout the line.
Did it say anything interesting? Like,
no,
did it spell out sex in Lion King or something?
Yeah, it's just like that.
I love those.
This is the same idea. I love the Deseret alphabet. I think we should bring it back. Has anyone worked out, you know, like a TrueType file for this sort of thing? I think this is missing from... How do I make a font? Do I just have to spend a couple weeks in Illustrator and just build it?
This is Wingdings Variation 3. Wingdings 3.
All right, if anybody wants to pay for me to have a license for Illustrator, I will make the font in Illustrator. And then you can all download the Deseret font. Unless... I wonder if it's on DaFont.
We need, you know what we need? Who's the girl that used to do this? Laura Barlow?
I don't know.
Is she the one that helped us with our Illustrator stuff? Laura somebody?
Yes.
She's very nice. We'll get her to do it.
Okay.
It's a genius idea.
Learning the alphabet. Oh, he created a font. We can mess with our style sheets. Someone has done some aspect of it. Oh, this is thrilling. We're going to change the whole site. The whole site. We're going to publish our articles in this font. It's going to destroy
our
SEO.
We're all Deseret.
I can't.
Now we as a cult, as a Mormon cult now, were validated by our private lingo.
I feel like we just have to live up to our expectations. I mean, it's only fair, right?
We are the Great Gatsby.
Yes. Now, Al, I've got some other very important news.
Speaking of living up to expectations.
Lindsay Williams at Deseret News has been kind enough to tell us about how Jake Mangakahia was able to serve, is still doing
some
ballet.
That's not his real name. His name has been changed to protect the innocent.
So,
no Jacob. One would name their child. That's like being named Arvydas Sabonis or something. Nobody names a child
Jake,
Sabonis.
Jake loves the ballet. And after his mission, he still wanted to ballet. And so, you know what happened? He got back in there, rejoined the Australian Ballet Corps de Ballet. After
come,
his
Nadia,
mission.
Let us dance like children in the night.
Unlike how many missions can potentially ruin sports careers, which is why we're so lucky that Jabari Parker did not serve a mission, everybody. This fine man.
Because all the guys that were like good college prospects, when they go on the mission, they're like still throwing the baseball in the MTC and they're doing 1,000 pitches a night, like just between scripture study and going to sleep. And like you're trying to keep up and keep working out and stuff. This guy's pirouetting in the shower and a lot of
just imagine
extra
that
leaps.
I picture a man, he's sitting there in the standing around the tree of life in the bathroom, spinning around, frolicking. Of course, they did. and he's singing the Tra-la-lo guy. It's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was him on the mission. He's like, Elder, I need you to stretch me out. I got to stay ready for when I go home. And he's like, I didn't sign up for this. I'm not helping you do this.
This is not, I'm thinking more of idiosyncrasies of missionaries, and we all have them because we're humans. I served with one elder who really tried to be kind of GQ in his approach to things. He wore his vest. He wore his pocket square out there. He had a certain stroll the way he went down the street.
Oh, yeah.
He strolled like
rose-colored
a baller.
Rose-colored glasses, this guy.
He strolled like a baller down the street, very smooth. On preparation day, he would put on one of his necklaces and some, you know, kind of a ribbed turtleneck, those sorts of things.
He had a necklace?
He had an assortment of blazers and the like that he would wear. And I was just
He
like,
had some bling?
As I'm saying, he blinged it up. The man was all about his style. And, you know, in some ways, I had to respect it because I just said, you're owning this. Good for you. Good for you. I'm wearing a pair of shorts and a crappy T-shirt just to go to the grocery store. But this is what you're doing is great. You're ready to go to the club.
He was in a blazer and necklaces. That's a strong move for a 19-year-old kid.
He had so many, like, I remember. He even had, it was, you know, the early 2000s. The very shimmery satin-like shirts. The solid color ones that you think you would wear if you were dancing in Miami, that kind of thing, you know. Very nice collared shirt, solid color, these were beautiful. I think I actually have a picture of him with his shirts because I said I needed to get a picture of him with his shirts. And if I find it, Al, I will send it to you.
That's amazing.
Maybe I'll look it up after I do this story real quick. BYU has finished their purchase of the trail on Y Mountain and the surrounding area.
So they own the Y, right? They own the Y. They didn't have the trail up to it, though.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we talked about some of this a while ago, their intentions to do it. Yeah, they own the Y. Now they own the trail. Area around it, they're going to permanently light it, which is kind of interesting. They usually only do it during homecoming and freshman orientation and stuff like that, where they would go run some lights up to the Y to see it at nighttime. But it's going to be lit all the time.
Now they've channeled a gasoline line all the way up there that will burn forever, like an eternal flame.
That's what it was. Okay, I wasn't sure.
His love's burning an eternal.
Other than that, I don't know if anything's going to change. But
did you see the Elder Holland face-to-face this
night? No, I missed it. Tell me more.
It was for the youth, so you're okay to miss it. You don't have youth. But one piece that bears repeating, one elder wrote in and he said, hey, my name's Elder Billy. Elder Holland didn't disclose the name. He protected it. for privacy.
I guess.
But the man signed his name on it. He says, hey, I was serving a mission. I served for 8 months. And then I came home for mental health problems. He's like, I feel like I did my best. I feel like I didn't have anything else to give. And I'm home now.
Huh.
But I'm wondering, did I do a good job or like, did I screw it up? Whatever it is, right? And Elder Holland answered, because it's interesting because he says, if you go to the MTC, there is today a video of me saying, stay on the mission. Get out here and stay on the mission. The Lord wants you here. He says, knowing that, also knowing your own capacity, you did a great job. You are a return missionary. You're not a failed missionary. You're a return missionary that did his best and deserves our respect and appreciation for the effort you gave. And, we welcome you home, and there is a place for you in the church. There's a place for you always, like, be proud, hold your head up high, that sort of thing. For any people that are close to folks with depression or anxiety or even more severe mental health issues, this is a very tender subject, so to have Elder Holland spend time. And what he did is he answered this question before his other ones. He said, I just want to spend time on this really quick, and then we'll do the full one later. But he did this and released it on Facebook. Kind of a pretty cool of him. Pretty cool.
I'm glad to see the church addressing this more and more. And there's always been such a social stigma around coming home early if it's out of your hands. All right, if you're coming home early because you're dumb, because you broke the rules or blah, 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 that's one thing. But if you're coming home early because you got sick, whether mental, physical, that's legit. And I think for a long time we have struggled to know how to treat those brothers and sisters. So it's good to see us trying to reach out and be a little bit more Christ-like in our approach and not try to make these people into, pariahs, which they often are. Like, it's got to feel so weird coming home early, even if it's for reasons like that, so-called justifiable reasons or whatever. It's still got to feel so weird and such a bummer to have to just bail on your mission and not be able to complete it.
Well, but at the same time, I know that feeling of genuinely being like, I have nothing left to give. I give up. I'm not being good to myself. I'm not, this isn't healthy for me. This is, and like being at your wit's end and coming home feeling like you did your best, you're trying to justify that and feeling like you need to justify that.
That's true.
I love that, there is some value in saying, you know what? People, like, if you have a burning desire to go on a mission, you should. I firmly believe everybody should go on a mission. It was such an incredible experience for me and did so much to help me, like, turn into who I am today. And I preach it religiously. See, very punny. But there also is something to be said for people that are like, I didn't want to go. And there's no amount of guilting them or trying to shame them in any way is going to improve your relationship with them or improve their relationship with the Savior. So don't be nice to them. Love them. You have no place.
Well said, Al. Hey, I sent you a picture of the Blink shirts.
That's good. That guy looks like he should be wearing Blink shirts.
You see
that's
that?
His hairdo.
Yeah, that was...
I could see him coming home and being like, hold on, I got to go get gelled up so I can go out tonight. He'd be like... I mean,
it was 2003. Things were different back then. America was at war.
Night of the Roxbury was fresh.
Not quite. Pirates of the Caribbean and Finding Nemo had yet to wow us. Come on.
There are literally 12 years of movies that had yet to wow us. That could have been a very long list. Interstellar, Jurassic World.
How much of a listicle would that be? Just be like movies that had yet to wow us in 2003, and just that'd be something on Clickhole. I think Clickhole should publish that. Okay, let's see. Al, do you want to talk about Interstellar being a gospel parable?
Oh my gosh, you can't watch Interstellar without taking your pearl of great price. I've seen the movie a dozen times. Phenomenal every time. Amazing.
And you've spoken very highly and At length about the what you feel are the spiritual illusions.
Oh, as you try and understand Abraham and the eons of time and what God shows Moses. God, when God took Moses up and showed him worlds without number and what man's true potential was, he was just showing him the movie Interstellar. That's all that was. Anne Hathaway, he was like, I'll be darned. That Matthew McConaughey, what an actor, huh?
Anyway, so this is an article in LDS Living by Neil Sylvester, author of The Hero Doctrine, Awakening to Your Potential. Neil decides to give us a rundown, which is undoubtedly a snippet from his book, about Star Wars, Harry Potter, and Interstellar, and the gospel messages contained therein. And a lot of these are pretty obvious because so much literature, so many movies follow the hero's quest template.
Sure, you know, Star Wars, obviously Anakin Skywalker was Peter.
Well, no, but characters have to have an arc. You know, people get, there's a redemptive arc. There's all these tragic figures. This is normal in literature. It's something you have to do. So it's no surprise we find these messages in pop media. So Star Wars, of course, you got, you know, though some of this stuff he says here, it kind of makes me chuckle because it's like so... I don't know. Luke Skywalker begins as an ordinary man working on a farm on a barren desert planet. Then he unexpectedly receives a call to adventure. That could be our own. It could be missionaries knocking on our door. Or any kind of personal spiritual quest. Danger beckons. Now, after first rejecting the call, Skywalker later decides. First off, I don't believe Skywalker rejected the call. He went to find R2 after R2 ran away. And then when he came back, his Uncle Owen and Aunt Merlu were burned, and then he said, I want to be a Jedi. Obi-Wan never said, be a Jedi, and he said, no, man, no. I need to get these power converters taken care of. Instead, he was doing his job going to find a rogue droid, and then he came back and his family was dead. Then he says, okay, let's Jedi it up. Anyway, you got some stuff there. Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban's a bit of an interesting one, because basically Harry, at the end, spoiler alert, folks, just be advised, Harry... he sees a Patronus come to save him, right? And he thinks it's his dad. Only later on, after going back in time, he realizes he did it himself, and he sees the father in him. You see the parallels there? We understand our godly nature. And then Interstellar.
Oh!
Yeah, right?
Oh.
Maybe a stretch. And then Interstellar. I like that he says, though, Interstellar is not overtly religious. I would argue Interstellar is the most religious of any of them, from overtly or other. It's all about mankind's potential, and then, of course, Murph's relationship with Matthew McConaughey, and you see the role that Heavenly Father plays, and, you know, tugging at the strings and giving us the codes, and as he says, they actually, like, defeat gravity in the end. Also,
Are we in Interstellar or Harry Potter?
Interstellar. They defeat gravity.
No. All right.
They conquer gravity, Jeff, and launch the people of Earth to space, which also the problem of the movie was not that they could not figure out how to beat gravity, but that's okay. So it's a fun little read from this interesting fella. There are no comments right now, so you know what we tell you to do in this case, folks. Just go on there and offer up your dearest
All
insight.
Of it should be Interstellar is the greatest movie of all time.
Just have every comment say that.
Yeah, or Cake is the greatest band
say
of all
Matthew
time.
McConaughey Either was one. Robbed of the Oscar. Robbed, I say.
Let's see. So there's a lot of news around Eliza R. Snow this week.
Yes, there was.
The Salt Lake Tribune released an article where they cited a suggestion by, who was this other author? Where was that? I don't remember. Jeff, you have the article somewhere. Anyway, so... They said there's evidence that Eliza R. Snow, in some of the experiences she had referenced, was actually raped by 8 Missourians during some altercations back in Missouri, which she supports with some of her writings about Missouri and how angry it made her, and part of that was Joseph Smith, as he took her as a polygamous wife.
Yeah.
And the reason was because she couldn't have babies anymore. This attack on her had left her unable to have children. Mm-hmm. It was sort of a It was a gesture from Joseph Smith where he was saying you'll have posterity in the afterlife, you know, by making sure that you're married to me and we're all set. So it was, a couple of things come out of this. One was sort of a reminder of some of the more endearing sides of polygamy in the early days of the church. You know, the purpose that served was often a very good purpose, especially as like widows were crossing the plains and they'd be paired up with able men so that they could eat and be cared for. And then some of the other stuff was some of how, I didn't even know that there was a culture or a sort of a group of people dealing with this back in those days. I think of the olden days as a very proper sort of Victorian era, nothing bad would happen sort of stuff. And it's kind of jarring to think back to some of these people and some of the stuff they actually went through might include such, you know, atrocities like this.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of crazy.
Undoubtedly. But it is interesting to note that the original author who presented this at BYU Idaho published some stuff on her own afterwards to clarify her own remarks, right?
Yeah. What did she say?
Well, basically, the media picked it up and ran with it and just said, shocking historical finding that Eliza Arsenault was gang raped by ruffians. She goes on to say, we're saying that our data says she likely was, but also making clear that the data, the account, comes from a secondhand account of someone who heard Eliza Snow allegedly tell the story of it later in life. So you're dealing with a very old record of someone who heard something from somebody else. That's not to say it didn't happen. I think there's plenty of stuff to substantiate that it did. And it's very sad that this happened to anyone. And like you said, Al, that it was a part of culture and there were people dealing with these sorts of things at that time. But it's also good to remember that the media can over-sensationalize things and make it seem like one thing was said when in fact one thing was implied or deemed probable and likely, but not saying that there's a firm historical record that blank did happen. Though the upside to this, if there's an upside, is that I hope this can make victims of sexual abuse and sexual violence feel that maybe, like, feel that the church has this in its history, that this is something that can be brought out, you know, brought out in the open, dealt with, that this can be a healthy thing for people who have experienced that to feel that they have somebody sort of on their side in a way. I'm not really phrasing that well, but, it's never, these atrocities are terrible. But when we remember it happens to even our own, hopefully that helps those who have also dealt with that not feel ashamed and not have the same troubles coping and realizing that there is hope for them as well. I hope there can be something positive from that and from people learning about this. Yep.
So let's see. Moving on, the Hinckley family has donated 5 rare books to BYU. This goes in the same category as BYU now has Y Mountain, and nobody really cares because it always was the same. This, we have a few other books from the Hinckley family. His father, President Hinckley, had a love for the Book of Mormon, so they had 5 books of scripture, 4 rare editions of the Book of Mormon, and a copy of the Doctrine and Covenants that were in their father's personal library. Are now donated. I feel like if that's in the family, you should keep that. Keep that at home, you know?
Yeah, but it's nice. They say they donated it, and I guess they did, but it's
now
on display.
Now nobody can buy these. Now they're in a collection.
This belongs in a museum. Thank you, River Phoenix, playing Indiana Jones in 1989. Well done.
The donated Book of Mormon copies date back to 1840 and include a Nauvoo edition and a Liverpool edition.
Look at it this way. Is it fair that some of the famous names of church leadership are the ones who own these incredible artifacts and pieces of history? Is it not better?
Yeah, we got to give these to the little man.
That the general public have access to these to see them and enjoy them. Isn't that better in the end? I submit that it is. Otherwise, these kids, they probably all just sit around passing around the books and saying, ha, 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 ha. Look what we have that the other people don't have. Ha, 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 ha.
Look at all these books.
Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat?
Stop.
Wouldn't you think, Mike? Also, speaking of BYU, Forbes named it the best college in Utah. So, good.
Got him. Got him.
Forbes just they said that's the best. They said BYU is decidedly better than Snow College. Who knew?
Let me clear out a few of these mentions. There are 11 facts about Howard W. Hunter in a list which Jeff loves on Deseret News. The list is of really note.
I like
He was an Eagle Scout.
I like his band.
He was a musician. Yeah.
But do you realize he was only the second Eagle Scout in Idaho in the whole state?
He played the marimba, saxophone, clarinet, trumpet, piano, and violin. That's handy with an instrument.
If that doesn't get the girls, I don't know what does.
He's a young man when he got married. He had was a lawyer, church leadership.
Well, what about the fact that his ancestors joined the church in Scotland, immigrated to the U.S., and then in the process became disengaged with the church, but still floated around the Mountain West? And then President Hunter's dad was not a member and wouldn't allow him to get baptized at 8 because, ironically, he thought that he was not accountable enough yet to make that decision on his own. So he didn't even get baptized till he was 12 and was able to be ordained a deacon. So it's pretty interesting that Howard Hunter had a non-member dad and had to wait. Sound familiar? Recently was required to wait a little bit longer to receive the blessings of baptism and other things thereafter. I thought that was interesting. Huh? Not all of them were interesting, but that was interesting.
It's moderately interesting. I don't think it's interesting at all, but I let you think it all you want.
Did you see that Mitt Romney did some mean tweets?
I haven't watched it right now. I haven't watched it yet.
You could bring it up and we could listen to it.
You want to?
Sure. Cue it up and then we'll go at the same time. You tell me when you're ready.
It's going to come out of my other set of speakers, so you're going to have to mute my stuff, but I'm doing it.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Tell me when.
All right. Ready? Let's go.
Now, I have some tweets here. These are real tweets.
This isn't rehearsed at all.
Made by various parties, including...
All right, I'll sit up for this.
...your friend, Donald Trump. So if you don't mind, I'll hand you each one and just read them aloud. It'll be painless if you just go through them, and there you go. All right. Mitt Romney, read
at real Donald Trump. Mitt Romney had his chance and blew it. Lindsey Graham ran for president, got zero capitalized, and quit. Why are they now spokesmen against me? Sad. Got zero. The only people I know who got zero are the ones who paid 25 grand to be at Trump University. They're the ones that got zero. So.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Fire.
Right? This is from a Trump supporter.
Okay. Donald Trump is trying to pull America back from the brink, and freaking Mitt Romney is playing with matches in the bathroom.
Is there any truth to that?
I'm not touching that, I'll tell you.
Okay, all right.
Okay. At Mitt Romney equals loser. That's true, actually. I lost. you may not have noticed. Let's see. Who are you anyway? And by the way, where do you buy the shoe polish you wear in your hair? At Trump 2016. I buy it at Costco in bulk. Let's see. I actually met Mitt Romney in a bank a couple of months back. I'm now working on a time machine to go back and punch him in the throat. Hashtag Trump. Pick or it didn't happen.
Okay. One more.
All right, one more.
Picks or it didn't happen.
That's a handle. At Cheddar Biscuit. I'd pay good money to watch Mitt Romney crying in a ball pit at a Chuck E. Cheese.
I would pay good money for that.
How much?
That's the right question. Something tells me that Cheddar Biscuit may have had personal experience doing something like that himself. So.
One final question. You made a lot of money. You've been very successful. How much would you pay Donald Trump to get out of the race?
There's not a right price for that. Donald Trump just needs to get out of the race. He said in there that he's sad. Let's make people happy, and let's have a candidate we can be proud of.
There you go. Thank you.
Well, that was cute.
I like that Mitt is, like, making a run.
Good job. He's getting ready. He's getting ready. The other ones aren't going to survive, and Mitt's going to have to jump in. Battle of the oligarchs.
This moment. The Mormon moment will turn into the Mormon hour. That was a fun note to go out of. I like old man. What a dreamboat that guy.
Hey, folks.
Anyway, all right, everybody.
If you don't know where to email us by now, then we're not going to tell you. Listen to last week's show and find out how to email.
Also, you can come visit us, thisweekinmormons.com.
Okay, but we're still not going to tell you
how
to
do any of those.
Also.
But you could come on Facebook and come see us there.
Yeah, you could do that.
Or on Instagram.
Yeah, or on Twitter. Both the latter two I've been very poor at maintaining of late. Really bad.
That's all right.
The Twitter maintenance. Well, whatever. Because Twitter is falling away slowly.
Chris Sacca is a sad, sad investor.
Yeah, he also invested in Uber. I think he's doing okay.
All right. Well, Jeff, have a great week, man. It's good talking to you.
It has been tremendous. Everybody, y'all have great weeks. I will say goodbye for Al. I am Jeff. Thank you for listening to This Week in Mormons. May you have a beautiful week, and we'll talk to you later on. Fare thee well.